हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव हरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
page 6 Okay. So in connection with opponents interpreting the contrasting qualities of the Lord, and the Lord owns contradictory and non-contradictory qualities that only add beauty to his personality.
Six.
And also, the Lord is partial to his devotees and consequently liberates them from their karmas. Adikarna 16. So these contradictory qualities, this is what throws off the materialist. Because they work on their so-called logic, which means it has to make sense in a particular linear fashion. And so this doesn't make sense. Because they, in the material platform, they have no experience of something that's contradictory that works properly. But the whole point is that there is such thing as contradictory, and that's how things work. That's because it's coming from the Lord. So for the Lord, then it adds beauty. It adds all these nice elements to him. So just, that's the point, is it's beyond what they can understand. They can't understand this.
Maharaj, can we say that the Lord is the only one person who includes both contrary and non-contrary qualities and no one else?
No, it means he's the one in which they're reconciled. So he has them, and so then it works perfectly. Others may have them, so if they're in connection with him, it's reconciled. If they're not in connection with him, they're not. For example, like a child, they work very hard, but they get absolutely nothing done. Okay? Yeah. Like that, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's hard work playing all day, right? You know, it's like that. Hence, the above summary summarizes the measured flow of work by the Sutrakar in this pada, accomplishing the task of demonstrating that Brahman is the creator. Right? Because you have the aspect is that creation is here, creation is material. Therefore, it can't come from Brahman because Brahman is spiritual. This is going to be the problem. See, because unless you accept Bhagavan and him as a person and how everything's going according to his desire, then you actually can't understand properly philosophy. You can be very philosophical, but it doesn't mean you understand what you're talking about. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Scholars are very scholarly, but it doesn't mean that they know what they're talking about. Right? They just know how to talk in a scholarly fashion. Is that?
Then they say that only scholars understand scholars.
No, only devotees understand scholars. Even scholars don't understand scholars.
Yes. One big conference was held to preach to the scientists, and all the big scientists of India had come to that. Devotees organized it, and the senior devotee sitting, and the a scientist devotee was talking to the devotee asked the scientist devotee, what, and these scientists were going on stage and giving their presentation about some science. So the devotee asked this scientist devotee, what are they talking about? He said that, I don't understand, and none of the people in the audience understand what in every individual is talking about.
Yeah, no, they can't. No, that's the whole point of the modern academia, is that you can say something in a very intelligent presentation that no one else actually understands. Because if they can understand it, then they can defeat it, and then your theory no longer stands. So as long as no one understands it, then it's a good presentation, it's a good theory. But otherwise, as soon as they poke holes in it, then that's it. You know? Because that's, you're basing it, because it's going to be impersonal. As we said, only devotees accept the Bhagavan aspect. Means others may be theistic and accept, have faith in God, and accept the position of God, but then the contradictory qualities and all that, they can't accommodate. So they'll take the easiest. Like that. It means anybody who claims to be religious and believe in God will all talk about him as a person. But then if you say, okay, then this person, how does he look? What does he do? Then they'll say he's impersonal. So they'll always revert back to the material consciousness because they don't actually have information forward. Right? So therefore it's all boils down to some variety of impersonalism. And so impersonalism then has the aspect that you're going to become that position. So that means you only need the help that you get until such time as you feel confident that you're on that position. Does that make sense? So let us say, like, for example, your contemporary physicist. Now, a lot of what they're doing will be based on Einstein. That means they wouldn't be able to do the stuff they're doing today without him. But now that they're able to do these things, you know, it's taken them 100 years to figure out what he's talking about. And now that they kind of figure it out, now they say, well, he's not really, and oh, this and that. And they'll say all kinds of things about him. But the point is they themselves could not come up with this. They're building on a foundation of the previous, you know, scholars. But then they'll claim that they're better. You know what I'm saying? So there's no, it always comes down to this impersonal aspect. That's the difficulty. So it's not a very solid thing. But in the material world, all you have is karma and jnana. That's all we have. So therefore, someone who's better at karma or jnana, they're considered the leaders in society. So if you can materially do things others can't do and generate facilities or, you know, manifest qualities that others don't have, then you're great. Like that. They don't bother to look at more than that because everyone's a materialist. You know what I'm saying? It's just like amongst thieves, then that one thief who organized and then they all got their cut and it was very nicely done and everything. He took care. Then he's a great person. They overlook the point that he's a thief, you know, because they're thieves. So the materialists all overlook that they're materialists. So as long as there's qualities that are overwhelmingly greater than theirs, something they can respect, then they're respected for that. And as long as no one brings up the other aspects, then it's cool. But if someone brings it up, then of course, then they have to. So the difficulty comes is these contradictory qualities, they can't see in relationship to Brahman. How can you have something that's temporary from something eternal? How can you have illusion from you know, pure knowledge? So these qualities they can't reconcile with their material intelligence. Therefore then they'll say they're non-existent. So that's how it always boils down to. Is that the materialists are always following the same thing. There's nothing new. But in, because they're so attached to it, then they'll take finer and finer points to try to prove it. You prove one point wrong, they'll take another point. When you prove that, there's, you know, in other words, they'll take either another vision of it, or they'll take a finer point within it. Something they'll take. So that's all Vyasadeva's doing, is going through every possible intellectual gymnastics that a scholar could do to try to prove materialism in karma or jnana. So that's what Vedanta Sutra is doing. So now it's this whole point of Brahman, because we showed before that when it talks about the supreme, the ultimate goal, the source of, that's Brahman. So then now how can that mechanically work? Because now they get into that. So now this is then dealing with that. Synopsis of Shankya, non-theistic dualism. Right, so theistic means you're accepting the position of the Lord. That's theistic. Now, in theism, it doesn't mean that you're a devotee. It just means you accept that there's a supreme and there's some control there. So that's the point. So the karmis and jnanis and yogis, they accept they're theistic, but at the same time as they're not interested in the personal form of the Lord. They don't consider it eternal. The karmis, then for them, you know, whether God's a person or not, it doesn't really matter. As long as they did their work, they get their result, then that's good enough. In fact, if I don't do my work, why would I get the result? Why would I get something that I don't deserve? So therefore, the Lord is only part of their whole karma mechanism. Does that make sense? The jnanis, then, because it's so hard to absorb yourself in nothing, therefore then they'll worship a form of the Lord, generally the Panchopasana. Right? But once they get to the point where they're comfortable absorbing themselves in nothing, they'll give that up. And then the yogis also then will absorb themselves in meditating on Supersoul, but they've never seen Supersoul, so who knows what they're meditating on. But the idea is they'll get to the point of giving up that worship. Does that make sense? So that's theism. And so it's based on the Shastra. It's based on that there's a supreme, but it's not accepting. So here, non-theistic means they don't believe that there's a God. Like that. So even though it's based on the Veda, so in that way we consider them theistic moralists, but we don't consider them theistic in the way of philosophy. So this term non-theistic, theistic may be used differently depending on the situation. Because you have the theistic meaning that you accept the laws of God. So here they do. But all of them up to a point, whatever's the point that they want. So Krishna says everyone's following his path, it's just how far. That's the point.
So these ones are the Nirishwara, and the ones who
are Nirishwara. Near
Ishwara.
The
others are the Shishwara,
who are theistic. Okay. Shankya philosophy, considered by some to be the oldest of all the philosophical schools, was systematized by an ancient thinker named Kapila, different from Devahuti Putra, Kapila in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's the atheist. When Prabhupada talks about the atheistic Kapila, so this is our man. Okay, Sambandha. Shankya does not, so now we're going to look at it from the five aspects of the Upanishads, where you have Chit, Achit, Ishwara, Sadhana, Sadhya. So then, what's the position of the Supreme, the soul, the material world? Then, what is the process of elevation, and what is the ultimate goal that you're trying to get to? Right? Shankya does not admit the existence of God. Instead, it sums up reality into two fundamental principles, Purusha and Prakriti. So that's all that they deal with. They don't go beyond that. Because the ultimate is the supreme Purusha, but they're not interested in that because they're the Purusha in this, you know, so then why bring in somebody bigger? Right? Yeah. Chit. The soul, Purusha, is a transcendental subject whose essence is pure consciousness. The Purusha is infinite. Purusha is not merely a substance with the attribute of consciousness, but is rather pure consciousness itself, in which there is neither change nor activity. Right? So you can see it's an impersonal school. They'll take the aspect of Brahman, but they're not necessarily, you see in all these, they're not necessarily distinguishing much between themselves and the supreme Brahman. Achit, matter. Prakriti is the unconscious principle, which is the ultimate cause of the world. Right? So, since there is nothing beyond That is the cause. Therefore, then, that means then matter has to be the cause. Because if we're the cause, then we're just making trouble for ourselves. So we just have to stop doing that. That's not going to look good. Who wants to be the one making the trouble? Right? So then matter's making the trouble. Right? It's unconscious. It does stuff like that. Right? But it doesn't make sense. How can something unconscious do anything? Right? That's the difficulty. Ishwar, the Shankhya Karika, does not discuss the existence of God at all. They argue that because the entire universe is a system of cause and effect, it could not be caused by God, because by definition God is eternal and immutable. Like, so they're taking it, God has to transform. So they don't understand about God's energies. That's the whole point. Prakriti they're accepting, but they're not accepting that that is God's energy. So therefore God's energy can transform. God doesn't transform. His energy transforms. Right? But he's not different from his energy, so therefore he is the cause of the creation, because he's the source of that energy that transforms. But he doesn't transform, the energy transforms. Right? So because they don't accept this point, then therefore that's where all the problem comes in. That which is unchanging cannot be active, the active cause of anything. Right? So that's their idea. So they don't see the personal aspect. So, the ultimate cause of the universe is eternal, but ever changing. That cause is pradhan, or prakriti, the eternal and ever changing unconscious material principle. In reply to this, one could argue that prakriti is not intelligent and must therefore be controlled and directed by some intelligent principle in order to produce the universe. Also, because there are many purushas, they cannot guide and lead the infinite, all-pervading prakriti. So one must therefore conclude that there is a God. The proponents of non-theistic Shankara reply, but this is not possible, because the act of controlling or guiding prakriti means to do something or to be active, right? So they can't be beyond. In addition, if God controls prakriti, then what inspires God to make her create a world full of pain and misery? Right? Because it all comes back to me. Why am I suffering? Why would God do that? God wouldn't do that. So he has to be beyond this. Moreover, one cannot say that God has desires, because desire implies imperfection. Which is so for us, it's an imperfection because we can't fulfill them. It causes us trouble. But God's desires cause him joy, and he can fulfill them. So it's not a fault. So that's the contradictory elements that are there. Okay, so God can't be imperfect, so he can't have anything that we deem imperfect. Therefore, then we define what God is, rather than... Therefore, there's no such thing as God. Purusha is sufficient to inspire the unconscious prakriti to manifest herself in the form of the universe. Right? Probably best this is used small piece for these Purusha.
Okay.
Because that means us. Yes. Capital would mean the Lord. Small would mean us. So, therefore, we see is that they can't understand by logic the position of the Supreme Lord. They say it's illogical that the Supreme, who's unchangeable, could therefore act and cause, you know, through desire, and therefore cause the transformation of prakriti. That would be a fault on God's part, and it would mean that he is changing. So then it would go against the definition. Though there's no God, so what's their worry about a definition? Right? They'll define him and say, therefore, there can't be one. Right? You know, so...
So saying if there has to be one, he has to be like this.
Yes, and so since you can't be like that, and there is not, then he's not there. Yeah,
that's just logic.
Yeah. Yes, and then the other fun part is that then they accept the illogical thing is that you have so if Purusha is sufficient to inspire the unconscious prakriti to manifest, who is this Purusha? Are we doing this? So then you know, how does this work? Why is it going on? Because if we step out, it'll still go on. Right? And so they can accept that, which doesn't make any sense. But the other, they can't. And what would be the point behind it? Right? Because then we can be God. So the bottom line is always going to come down to a material point, an attachment. So they're always going to function on attachment. It's just what attachment works for their particular combination of the modes. So this combination makes, those who follow Shankya. Right? Because someone else will have a different combination, so they'll prefer a different philosophy. Right? Abhideya, sadhana. According to Shankya philosophy, the universe is full of pain and misery. And even what is thought of as pleasure is mingled with sorrow because all pleasures ultimately end in disappointment, which is the basis of misery. The cause of suffering being ignorant in the sense of non-discrimination between the self and matter. Freedom from suffering must come from knowledge of the distinction between the two, right? So therefore, you can see is their analyzation. So this is their point, is how they analyze. There's always going to be some aspect. So their analyzation of the difference between matter and spirit, that's the whole idea. That's their sadhana. But this liberating knowledge is not merely intellectual understanding of the truth. It must be a direct knowledge or clear realization of the fact that the self is not the body. Right? So they want to take it to realization, which we'll agree with. Right? To realize the self, we require a long course of spiritual practice with devotion to and constant contemplation of the truth that the soul is different from the body. Right? So we see here is that devotional element has to be there because there's nothing, no karma or jnana functions without devotion. Right? Now we may be confused by the use of the term in that way. But devotion means that you have had that commitment to, you know, that faith in. And that, you know, ability to make the endeavor for, right? And do it in a nice way. So that is devotion. Now, the point is only in pure bhakti, then that devotion is eternal. Because it's the soul's eternal, God's eternal, the relationship's eternal, and the point of trying to please the Lord is therefore on the eternal platform. So that's actually bhakti. Because that, after the particular action has been performed and the results have been gained, the bhakti still remains. Therefore, that's actually called bhakti. But karma and jnana won't function without bhakti. But because the purpose is not pleasing the Lord, or therefore pure bhakti, as soon as the goal is obtained, the bhakti leaves. Bhakti disappears because you've gotten the goal. So therefore, it's not technically called bhakti. We won't call it devotional service. But still, it only functions because of bhakti. So if someone has the proper knowledge, proper skills of the subject, you know, knows what results can be gained from that, has the proper attitude, and with devotion applies themselves to this process, that's the only way they'll get a result. Doesn't matter. The karmi, jnani, or devotee, that's the way it works. Right? Because if we're saying there's only Krishna and there's only devotional service and there's only God's laws, then that means there's only bhakti. But the point is people whose consciousness is not devotional, even though they're following the same process, then it's not devotional service. Because its intent is not to please Krishna. So therefore, that devotional attitude leaves once they get their result. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, someone comes to the office, right? They need your permission for something. And they're really nice, they bring you things, they talk nice, they ask about the family and this and that, and you know, it's all very, very nice and pleasant. But once they get the paper signed or whatever it is, then you may never see them again. And they may not even behave nicely, depending upon their character. You know, they may, once they get it, then they may make some snide comment, this, that. Or they'll just, you know, say Hari Bol and leave, and then you'll never see them again. So, in other words, it's temporary, so we don't call it devotion. We call it devotion when it's eternal. Does that make sense?
So for it to be eternal, it means bhakti has to be the sadhana and the sadhya?
Yes. Because it's the goal, but it's the process still remains. Because you've done service, you want to do more service. But here, it's you've done service, you don't want to do more service. Like you're like there, you're rendering service to the government official, but you don't want to do that. It's just that's the process. So the smart people know that and they do it. Right, people who, you know, they have their ideology and why should I surrender to this? This is demeaning. This is improper. Why should I do that? He should just do his duties and this. So they get nothing done. And the successful people, they know that's just the way it is. They don't like it, but they do it. But once it's done, they don't do it anymore. Like that. So in other words, everything works because of bhakti. Now, as you go, as the consciousness drops, then you see that the form of bhakti being used and that face starts to become more and more distorted. So it's just about the senses, just about the social position, economic position, or it's just about, you know, following the Shastra for gaining the karma, jnana. You know, elevation of the heavenly plan is the liberation. But the point is without putting in that effort, then they don't get results. Right? Even if it's on the central platform, you have to put in that effort. You have to put in that commitment. Then only it functions. Does that make sense? So we have to understand the working principle is bhakti. That's the only thing that works. It's not the mechanics. Why bring this point out? Because you can say, because it may become confusing. Because then we're saying that everybody's engaged in bhakti. But we see in the Prasna of Brahma Mohan Leela, that's what Brahma saw. Everybody's engaged in worship of the Lord. But only the devotees, that worship is eternal and to please Krishna. So that gives transcendental flavor. All the other ones are temporary, therefore give material. Right? So that's just the way it works. They put in their effort. You know, the slug is moving down the rock, but it has to put in its effort. You know what I mean? Committed to that. Otherwise, if it doesn't, you know, do, then it won't get anywhere.
This really brings out the importance of the prayojana.
Yes, yes. Now in this, why, so from that side, it has, one may, confuse and then, but everybody's a devotee, therefore, because you're not distinguishing between what's eternal and what's temporary. Right? Because all souls are Krishna's souls. They're all technically servants of the Lord. Some act that way, some don't. So the point is there's going to be a common method on how everybody functions. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have a trained pedigree dog, or you have a street dog, but they're still dogs. But what effect they get, that's going to be different. But how they'll go about it will be dog stuff. Does that make sense? Like that. That's the whole thing. You know, one stands there and barks and, somebody, yells at them. And the pedigree dog stands there and barks and they get a prize. You understand? But it's dog stuff. So therefore, souls always function on the platform of the soul. But it starts to get distorted as you move away from Krishna. So the forms that they'll use, instead of using the pious things recommended in the Shastra, starts to go down into more and more speculative until it's just, animalistic. It's just what works for the senses. Right? Now, on the other side, the advantage then of this is then you can see the difference between the action itself and devotion. Right? So in other words, the action is the common point between the materialist and the devotee. Having the knowledge, performing the action, getting the result. That's the common point between devotees and non-devotees. Right? But the difference is the devotion to Krishna as a person or to devotion to simply the whatever is the causes the result that they want. And they don't even necessarily care. I do this. All I know is I put in this kind of effort into economics. I get money. How that's working mechanically, karma, and, the cause and effect of karma, that there's a supreme or there's paramatma, that it doesn't matter at all. I put in this effort, I get my result. So that devotion is as far as that, no knowledge. Right? Just enough to make it work. Does that make sense? So then you can tell is that what makes the difference. So all you have to add to that is devotion. Right? So now if someone's pious, naturally they're following the Shastra. So adding devotion, they're already doing things that are recommended. Right? But the Akarmi and Vikarmi, now they're going to be doing things that are not recommended. They're either going to be not doing what's recommended or doing things that are not recommended. Right? So then the problem is for them, first add devotion. That is connected to the Lord. You know, and if you can see a connection, then you do that. Start there. It'll purify your position. But you'll naturally bring it to the position of performing the activities that are recommended, since the result is for the Lord, not for ourselves. Right? Now, if by looking at it you can't see a connection, then leave it. Do something else. That's the only point there'd be a change. But how did that change come about? By a particular action or by consciousness? Yes, that's why Prabhupada says the only thing you need to do is change consciousness. Because if you're already doing proper activities, you change the consciousness, now everything becomes perfect. If you're not doing proper activities, by changing the consciousness, that'll purify the situation you're in. So naturally, what needs to be adjusted, you will. So that's the whole point. Change the consciousness, not what you're doing. So that's why the focus is on the consciousness, and then the support of those activities in that in that Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? So that's then the other side of it, is that because to make it work anyway, you have to apply devotion. Because otherwise, that's why Rupa Goswami says, don't be neglectful in ordinary dealings, because we'll say it's not devotion. So we don't put in the effort. We don't put in that devotion. And so therefore it doesn't work. You know, because then we don't care, because it's all material. But then the point is material belongs to Krishna. It's Krishna's material. So how are we engaging it? How are we dealing with it? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, you know, I'm being Krishna conscious. After using the shower, then the knob that fell, you know, is not connected. I don't just leave it there because it might fall off on the floor or that and fall down the drain. I put it back on the little shelf there. So now the next person come along can take that and then use the knob to, you know, make the water wet. So, right. But the idea that it's Krishna's shower, therefore fix it, that is never going to be part of the equation, because it's all material and we don't care about material. You understand? So this is then where it comes. No, but the point is that these secondary things are, they become devotional when they're connected to Krishna. So if this is Krishna's shower, then why wouldn't you fix it? Right? You understand? But at the same time as, yes, I have so much devotion because I'm fixing the shower. No, it's only devotion when it's fixing the shower for Krishna. Right. So that's the whole point, is you have these, you have the primary and secondary, and we'll either take one or the other. That's material consciousness. Right. But if you take the primary without the secondary, that's better, because at least you accept Krishna consciousness, but materially it'll be a bit of a disaster. Spiritually it'll be good, but how do you express it so that it'll be a little bit wild, because there's no form, there's no religion for it, so it'll be speculative. Right? So, makes sense. So the devotees that first learned from Prabhupada how to do things and just did that and didn't care about anything else, then their success is there, because they apply themselves into those areas devotionally. And so in those areas they make devotees, they distribute prasad, they distribute books, they're sankirtan. You know, life is simple, life is uncomplicated. So those things go very well. But because you're not, they're only applying that much religion. They're not applying what Prabhupada talks about in his purports, you know, to expand that religious. You're doing a little bit, now expand that. They're not doing that. So then, no, but we have to bring in the religious aspect. But instead of bringing it from Shastra, because we're approaching from a material platform, so if you approach from a material platform, then what religion can you use? What's your conditioning? Not according to Shastra. Right, so that's the problem. We have to stick with that. Prabhupada gave, so Prabhupada in his purports are also giving more in his discussions and all that. So we extend the purview of that religious practice and maintain that primary focus on Krishna. then it all expands nicely. But if we say, oh, that's fanatic, that being focused on the primary without considering the secondary, so therefore we get into secondary and drop the primary. Once you drop the primary, what secondary are you left with? So unless you're from a practicing smarta family, there's a good chance it's going to be akarma or vikarma. Basically, you can almost guarantee. Right? So that's the way it's going to work out. And then, well, now we'll say this is devotion. But you have to know what is devotion because how it works. So that's why then the differentiation between primary and secondary. Right? Lord Balaram's the lord of the secondary. Right? Because he's the lord of the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis. Right? His expansion is as Mahanarayan is, or Vasudeva is, the Jnana Shakti. And so they both consider themselves devotees of Krishna. So they're the lord of the secondary, so that's through which the devotion is expressed. Right? And Radharani is the lord of the primary, Krishna's desire, the Hladi. Right? Does that make sense? So, now in applying the secondary aspect, but what is it? It's only to please Krishna. So if we get into the secondary not connected to Krishna, whatever's our conditioning, then what's the point? You know, it's better than nothing, but it's not actually that elevated. It's the natural starting point But then the claim that it's the starting point, it's the middle, and it's the end. I think you can only say that stuff about pure devotional service, the holy name, stuff like that. I've never seen shlokas that say, you know, the Prakriti Bhakta's, you know, beginning stage of seeing everything connected to themselves and then connecting that to Krishna. You know, that is the process, that's the goal, that's the means, have you ever seen a verse like, no. So we have to understand that there is distinction. Yes.
This distinction, you know, about the secondary and the primary shakti is only in the material world, but in the spiritual world, we never distinguish.
You don't have to, because everybody only uses it for Krishna. Because that's, the point is everybody's going to be involved in secondary. Everybody, every living entity. Devotees are also involved in the primary. Does that make sense? So, by looking at it that way, then you can see that's what we have to add, is Krishna consciousness. So in other words, because there's the confusion, how could someone fall from the spiritual world? Because the point is you're in the spiritual world, you're performing the secondary activities of the spiritual world, but you're not connecting it to Krishna, so therefore it's material. You know, they're taking it, it's a different activity. You know, it's like it's like Mother Jashoda, the cook, then takes the cauliflower and first dunks it into, you know, liquid nitrogen, and then after that cooks it, right? You know, so, right? Because it has to be different. Spiritual world's different, right? But that's the whole point. That's the impurities coming up from gyan or impersonalism. That we take it that the spiritual has to be opposite of what's here. Right? There's a difference in that it doesn't have the mundane aspect, the temporary aspect. It's eternal. But mechanics are the same. Like that. Mechanics, in fact, are better. You know, in other words, what your arm can do is much better than what the arm in the mirror can do. But the arm in the mirror basically does the same mechanics. But by moving around, it doesn't pick up anything. Right? It's only because the actual hand picks it up, therefore the one in the mirror does. Right? So the whole point is the spiritual world, then the activities that go on there, that's the natural things controlled by the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis. But those are only in support of and pursuance of Krishna's will. That's all. So that's what makes it devotion. So if you take up these activities and the goal is not to please Krishna, but we like doing them, then that's not going to be there. In other words, you engage the senses. That's the same. But the difference is that you're appreciating Krishna in connection with that. Does that make sense? Like Lord Chaitanya is eating the spinach, is saying Krishna has tasted the spinach. So he can't taste the flavor of the particular spinach? And the spicing and what was used and that. Yeah, so the senses taste that, but he's tasting what's beyond that, what's Krishna. So that means the materialist is eating and the devotee is eating. One's appreciating the spiritual aspect, the other's just only the taste. Right? But as prasad, because it is Krishna, therefore they'll get spiritual benefit. But they won't be getting the same taste as someone who appreciates the prasad. But still they'll get spiritual benefit. But if it's not offered to Krishna, then it's just they'll just get the taste of what's there. That's all. So that's why, does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point is that sense gratification is already included in bhakti. But because it's not about the senses, it's about Krishna, it's not called sense gratification, it's called bhakti. Because bhakti is the original activity. Therefore, all activities extend from bhakti. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I just want to clarify. So, what you were saying is that the impurities can begin in the spiritual world, like starting to want to have your own...
yeah, well, where else would they begin?
So then... When one is in the spiritual world, then you have
but the impurity means not connecting it to Krishna. That's the impurity. When does darkness happen? When does darkness happen?
When the sun goes down.
Yeah, when there's no light. So it's not that it's a separate thing. It's just when Krishna consciousness is lacking, then you have material. So when you have the Griya, Jnana, and Kriya Shaktis without the Icha Shakti, you know, of Krishna, that's material. You understand? That's all. So it's just lacking the one, you have the other. Because we're taking it as something different and separate from God and separate from the... But these are all mundane philosophies. Right? That's what the Shankyas are saying here. It can't be God. Because God's, you know, perfect and this and can't have any impurities and why would people be suffering it? That's the first thing. As soon as you bring up that God's in control of the world, actually in control, the first thing that the, you know, a modern theistic person will bring up is then why are we suffering? Then it's God's fault. No, no, it's your fault. It's just like the government controls the prison and some prisoners are, you know, things are going more smoothly and some aren't. Why? Because the ones that follow the rules is going more smoothly and those who don't follow the rules, that's where the problem goes. Like that. So they'll always leave themselves out because as it is, they want themselves to be the capital P Purusha here. Right, rather than the small P Purusha.
So even in the spiritual world we've become completely absorbed in Krishna, we still have to work to maintain that because
you don't have to, it means it's just like if you're doing something you like to do, do you call it work?
You have to
endeavor. The point. Devotional service. Service means endeavor. Because if you just want to sit around and absorb yourself in the happiness of the spiritual, that's called, you know, that's called liberation. Yeah. So that's why we're not interested. Right? Even the Vaishnav liberation, it's not an end. Right? Because we'll say that some will say, well, the goal is Sarupya or like this, but the goal is not that. Because that's just the situation. So, okay, you have the same form as the Lord. Now what? You're not going to serve the Lord in that form? Right? So therefore, yes, they'll serve the Lord in that form. So that means having that form is not the goal. It's just the spiritual situation that they want to be in. That's why all devotees are liberated. But it's just we don't put any focus on the liberation. While others may. You know, it's about being an associate of the Lord. And then they serve the Lord as an associate. You know, so for us, it's just about serving Krishna. And so to do that, you'll be an associate. But it's not about that. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, the rich person is riding in, you know, a very expensive car, you know, to go somewhere. But for them, it's just how they get somewhere. for someone else, they'd be in the car, check it out, the seats, pushing all the buttons, doing all the things, you know, like that. So it's about the ride, not about where they're going with it, you know. So that's the difference, right? Because the point of the car is it gets you somewhere. That's the primary. The secondary is, you know, the facilities in getting you there. Does that make sense? So that's the difference.
Yeah. When Lord Brahma was making everything, he even made demons.
He made demons.
Mm.
Yeah, because people want to be demons, so therefore they have to make them. Otherwise, what do they do?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, that Krishna is everything, the dark part and the light part.
Yeah, but the point is it's just a lack of the light, that's all. That's what darkness is.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you add devotional service to the demons, and they become nice, like Prahlad Maharaj.
Can you say it's lack of Krishna's superior qualities, like really a big lack?
That's there, but they may even have those.
Okay.
You know, they may even have those. It's a matter of means that one's not interested in that aspect of serving the Lord and all that.
Mm.
That's the difference. So the suras or the devas, they do things because it's God's laws, you know, and so they're supposed to do that because it's pleasing to the Lord. Whether they always remember that or not's another thing. But for the demons, it's just they may follow those laws because they know it gets a good result, but it's not about pleasing the Lord or doing it for the Lord. They're just doing it for themselves. That's what makes them demons.
Mm.
So you don't necessarily have to have, you know, 8 very large, monstrous teeth that stick out of your mouth and a shock of orange hair to be a demon. It means that's just, you know, one of the classic forms that many of them, you know, are comfortable with. I'm sure if that was an option, there'd be a lot of people looking like that these days, you know, like that. But since they can't pull it off, therefore they don't.
Prince Jain.
Yeah.
Some are trying really hard.
Yeah. They can't get those big teeth, but you can get the orange hair though. Some of them always go for green or something else. Orange just doesn't seem to be the.
Maharaj, this example about the knob and the bathroom shower thing. What has gone wrong with our preaching, our education of the newcomers, etc., that has caused for this class of devotee to erupt like it is gone? Where have we gone wrong, and what should we do to not get this class of devotee with
it's
this
knob?
It's
just show how it's all connected to Krishna, so everything within the confines of our duties, then all should be done nicely. Because as Rupa Goswami says, don't be neglectful in ordinary dealings. So therefore, since it's Krishna's shower, therefore you keep it fixed. It may break, that's because of usage, but then as soon as you can, you get it fixed. You don't not worry about it because, oh, that's material. So that's the point. It's just a lack of seeing everything connected to Krishna. So we'll see the direct connected to Krishna. Basically, all devotees will see the 5 main items connected to Krishna. Right? But now, after that, in their daily life, varnashram aspects, they won't see that connected to Krishna. They'll consider that material. Right? So someone's dutiful, they'll do those things. Someone's not dutiful, they won't. So then it's just a matter of conditioning. So then the real point is not whether you're following Vedic or not, it's whether you're willing to follow rules or not. Right? So everyone's willing to follow generally the devotional rules. But then when it comes down to the ones that govern the maintenance of the body, then it's, you know, do we follow rules or do we just make up, or are we mavericks? We just do whatever we like. Right, and then of rules, do we follow rules given by scripture or just what we feel is socially acceptable? So basically, it comes down to those who don't follow rules but are surrendered to following the process, to those who try to, you know, how you say, temper the process by following their own mundane social rules, not based on scripture. So that's kind of what it. So one's considered that they're the, you know, soft preaching, the intelligent, the civilized, the cultures, while the other ones are, you know, the fanatics and uncultured.
rather than...
No, they have Krishna consciousness add the culture, but the point is you have to know what culture is as by principle to be able to teach it. So unless you're living there, I mean, in other words, if you're always on your computer and doing things there and think that's management, you'll never see that the brahmachari shower is falling apart because you're actually not managing. You know, being a, how you say, being a bureaucrat or a kayasta, that yes. You know, you're able to do your office work nicely, put it into nice wording, know how to do the wording so it works, and all that. And Prabhupada defines, that's what a kayasta does. That's the uniqueness of a kayasta over a shudra. Because a shudra is a shudra doing shudra work. A kayasta is a brahmachatriya vaishya who's not a shudra who's doing shudra work. Therefore, they have the intelligence to be able to look into the refined ways, how to write a paper. You know, it's like you want to write that paper to government. They know how to write that paper because they have that higher intelligence, but they're using it for lower work. That work needs to be done. You know, and so therefore it's quite helpful. But one has to understand that that's not management. That's bureaucracy is not management. So therefore you won't see. Right? But you go around, you see everything, and then tell people and train. So that's it. So in other words, training is what does. Actual leadership and training, that's what then causes. Then you get rid of these problems. And then if you separate yourself, then from it and just sit in an office all day, then you won't, these secondary aspects, except for your computer and those things, you know, and the Wi-Fi, then won't function. So therefore, what people are doing, what they're eating, what they're dressing, and all this, we won't. And so since we don't know all those things, the only thing we know is the modern. So therefore, we'll try to add in a little bit of the, you know, temper it with the modern. And then therefore, now it's acceptable and everybody will want to be a Hare Krishna because we wear socks. Right? But isn't that why you join a religion? Because people wear the same colored socks? And that's why. You can't join this because... Either they don't wear socks or they're two different socks. They're not matching. But this religion, they're wearing socks and they match, so I gotta join that. It's just, that's the, you know. Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like Catholics, they've all joined that or they have faith in it because, you know, the Pope, the Cardinals, the Bishops, you know, all the leaders within the thing, then they all wear, how you say, sports shirts and shorts, right? And like that. That's what they wear. So that I want to be part of that because I feel comfortable and all that. They don't wear any of these robes or any of these ancient archaic dresses and stuff like that. So that's why, you know, you have, I forget how many people, 500 million or something following the, you know, the process. Because they don't do those things. You know, they don't have rituals, all these archaic rituals. They just follow a modern lifestyle and a modern clothes and a modern everything. And by modern, I mean the particular middle-class lifestyle that I grew up in. That's the, you know, definitive definition. That makes sense. So that's the whole point, is if we don't distinguish, that's why Vedanta Sutra shows us how to distinguish what is bhakti and what's not. What's nature of the soul, what's conditioning. Because without that, you may get confused as you get into finer and finer aspects of devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so prayojana for the shankyas. Through the practice of the yoga of discrimination, that is, the repeated affirmation of non-identification with the body, senses, or mind, such as, for instance, I am not the experiencer, I am not the doer, whatever is going on is in Prakriti, right? So we're using this process. But you see is that they don't have God as the result of this, the devotion is this. They're simply trying to separate it so that they can get liberated. Right? So one polishes one's intellect and becomes more consciously aware of one's true nature. but not about God's nature. This type of knowledge or understanding leads one to the state of freedom from all confusions and false identifications. Thus one attains the knowledge of the true self. After the self realizes its true nature, all anxieties are dissolved. The ultimate goal is liberation, a state in which the soul is separated from matter and is free of suffering. Right? It's because their interest to know what is matter and know the position, therefore then the whole process starts. So they'll take it that they're the cause of creation.
Right. There seems to be quite a disjunct there. If their focus is, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this, how does that give them understanding of what I am?
Yes. Well, that's why they say, they use all these terms, true self and all these things. It's just like any philosophy, any religion uses these terms. Mm-hmm. But the point is it actually that? It may be in pursuance of that. It may have elements of. But it's only pure knowledge when it's about pure devotional service. Anything less is not. So that's why then what we study and associate with is only pure knowledge. Right? Or any other knowledge we have to see, we see it in relationship to. Like, let's say you have to study a certain branch of knowledge to do a particular activity. But why are we doing the activity? We'll see that in connection with the Lord. So therefore, it's in pursuance of pure knowledge. Is that so?
Even the goal is liberation, but the process is actually, it doesn't lead to the liberation.
No, none of the six schools lead to liberation.
But still they claim that that's their goal, somehow.
Yes, because you only have karma again. So you're either going to be enjoyers, or you're going to be into liberation. So in other words, even you try to enjoy perfectly, there's still there's always going to be a fault, so there's going to be some misery. Even if you're able to do things nicely, where the faults are very minimal, but there'll be a dissatisfaction because the material can't satisfy the soul. So it's only as long as you think there is the possibility to get that, then you have that mundane aspect. You understand? Otherwise, then they become pessimistic. So they go for the liberation side. So in other words, if you're idealistic, you go for the karma, and if you're pessimistic, you go for the yeah. And any combination. Is that
very misleading,
because all there is the materialistic thought. So that's why without coming in contact with the devotees, one actually won't have real knowledge. One will be using the mind, the intelligence, the senses. One will be doing activities, getting results, gaining varieties of understandings, but it will never help the soul. So it's only when you get from the parampara, from the devotees, then it actually takes on the real nature. Then you actually start to get out of the material attainment. Because otherwise, before that, there isn't. That's why this knowledge is so important. Right? That's the whole point. We can't underestimate the importance of this. We can't underestimate the importance of this. That's why the association of devotees is the ultimate thing. We're doing all these secondary activities to support devotion in sadhana bhakti. And it's not that the activities themselves don't continue, but we're already practiced at it. Right? It's just like when you're starting to learn to do something, then you have to focus on it. And it's more about that than its application. But once you actually get good at it, then it's about the application, and the other thing just happens. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it's just the association of devotees. That's what makes it. That's the focus. So it's only through association of devotees you know what to do. Right? So in other words, what knowledge is there, what activity is there. But once one gets to the platform, the higher platform, to bhava, then it's about the taste of Krishna consciousness. It's not about the knowledge and activity, it's about the taste. Right? Because it's about Krishna's taste. So therefore you're working in the medium of taste. Right? But that means patience manifests through the knowledge and activity. So the jnana and kriya shaktis, they support the icha shakti. So it's the same principle. It's just the focus has shifted. But like you said, you don't make the distinction in the spiritual world. You don't need to. Because it's all about Krishna, therefore everything's connected. Right? And so even these great souls, they come here, they don't need to make the distinction because they see everything connected to Krishna. It's just the inferior. You know, it's like going from the nice, luxurious living room, let's say, down into, you know, a room in the basement that's, you know, all the junk's in, you know, like that. So, you know, somebody's upset and grumpy, so they've gone and hidden there. So you have to go down there and deal with that. You know what I'm saying? So the analytical they bring out for us because of our conditioning so that we separate ourselves. Because on the material platform, we make no distinction between the Icha, Kriya, Jnana, Shaktis. Right? It's our desire and then whatever it takes to get it done. Right? So someone will say, what's wrong with what I've done? Because it got my desire. And we're saying, no, no, but the activity itself is wrong. So it's just a matter of, because it's not connected with our desire, we see the secondary. And the person who it is their desire, they just see the primary. So like-minded individuals, they all have that same concept of primary and secondary, or at least compatible, or workable. And so therefore, how they see it, that's the way it works. And everybody else, they just see the secondary, so therefore they only find the fault. But when you see the primary and what people are doing, then you can see what's good there, but then where the weakness is. You know, it's just like if I take the third grader, you know, and hand their paper, you know, to the, the professor of, you know, literature, what marking will they get? Right? Not very good. Right? But if you're looking at it, here's a paper of a third grader. He'll look at it from that perspective and he'll say, okay, he's used this, spelling's not bad like that, a few little weakness in this area, he's got to work on this and that. So there's potential there. So that's the whole thing, is that we're using the analyzation of the spiritual so that we go move forward there and we analyze the material to break down our attachment to it. So we're using that, this knowledge, as the bridge between the two. Right? But it's only a bridge because it's our consciousness has to go. The place doesn't have to change.
That has to be Krishna Bhakti as the goal.
Yeah. Because, see, it's the pure devotees, they're in the spiritual world, they're in the spiritual world. When they're in the material world, they're still in the spiritual world. So it's not about place. Well, us, we're in the material world, we're in the material world. If we go to the spiritual world, we'll still be in the material world. So that's why place is not the whole thing. We may put the emphasis on place. That's why all the things of how do we fall and this and where, and it's all about place because it's secondary. It has nothing to do with the reality. That's why, why waste your time talking about it? Because unless you understand what's the primary, it can't be understood. Because spiritual is about primary. Material is, you know, in other words, spiritual is about, exclusively about primary with the support of secondary. Material means it's about secondary. There is no primary because it's not about Krishna. We may faultily put ourselves there, but we're not the ones that make things work, so we can't actually claim to be the primary. So we try hard.
Devotees usually say that about the place thing that you said, the spiritual world and material world is a matter of consciousness. But then because Prabhupada always mentions going back to Godhead, you know, so it defines a particular place. That is the reason why it's a general understanding of devotees.
Yes, no, but his point is you're going to that place, but the point is that unless you have spiritual consciousness, even though you'll be there, you won't be there. It's just like, okay, Aristasura. Is he in Braj? Yes. But is he in Braj? No. Because he's totally material. Right? So therefore, even though he's there, he's not there. So that's the point. Unless you change the consciousness, you won't actually be there. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, okay, the parents, they take their little kids to the kirtan. right, for Kirtan Mela. The parent is at Kirtan Mela. Are the kids at Kirtan Mela? No, they're something else. You understand? So the point, of course, they get some benefit, but the point is it's not about the place, it's about the consciousness within the place. So now, if you can get the proper consciousness and the place, that's the best. So if you have the proper consciousness, then you naturally will be in that place. But if you lack that consciousness, then you won't be in that place. In other words, those without the consciousness, they're here. So it's not that just that being in the spiritual world, that's the point. No, it's being in the spiritual world, the spiritual consciousness, that's the point.
On Maruji's point, it seems that because of our conditioning, when we hear Prabhupada say, go back to home, back to Godhead, we think in terms of a different location.
Yeah, but it is a different location. But my point is you can take advantage of that location while you're here. You know, you don't have to actually go there to be there. Because if the spiritual world is no time and space, it's not governed by that. So you can be in the spiritual world and be here at the same time. Because there is no time and space. Here there's time and space. You're here, you know.
Here and now.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. The Sutrakar points out that Adikarnas 1 through 3 disprove the opponent's notion of, quote, the Vedas contradict the Shankya and Yoga Smritis, right? So they're taking it that their Shastras, which then are based on the Veda, but because their lack of knowledge, they can't see the connection, right? Because the Veda is actually talking about Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. And so they can't see that, so they'll see that the Veda is contradicting their position, rather than that if it seems contradictory, then they have to adjust their position, their understanding.
It would seem like a weakness to the Astika position.
Yes, it is. Well, that's why they're called that, simply because they accept the Veda. How much they accept the Veda is another thing. So you see is that basically, only in the when you're dealing with the Purva Mimamsa or Uttara Mimamsa, they accept the full Veda. Everyone below that only accepts those aspects of the Veda that support their philosophy. So those that contradict, then they're against. But the ones that support, then they're going to base their whole philosophy on that.
Is that why the Bhakti are given the term Mimamsa?
Yeah, I mean, you can't call the whole thing Mimamsa. Because Mimamsa means your hermeneutics, how you'll interpret the Vedic verses. It's just that the first four schools, then they'll only approach those verses that they can easily apply their hermeneutics. While the Karma Mimamsa has much more sophisticated hermeneutics that they can apply it on every verse, at least according to their understanding. That's why they can defeat all the other, those lower four schools. So only Vedanta can defeat karma, right? So even Shankara can defeat karma, but then you're still left with mundane. So it's only the Vaishnava Vedanta can defeat, right? And then what reconciles all the Vaishnava schools and all the Vedic schools, that will be the Achinta Veda Veda Tattva. Right? So make sense?
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Just thinking, this philosophy is like specifically it was brought in Kali Yuga. This Sankhya philosophy, Kapila was in this atheistic Kapila was in.
No, they're always there. It's just that in Kali Yuga, then Shankaracharya brings it out and makes these kind of things very prominent. But otherwise, these schools have always been there. It's just they'll be minimal.
Okay, in other yugas.
Yeah, that's all. You know, it's just like. Let's say in Satya Yuga, it's not that there's not tribal, it's just they're not very prominent. Well, in Kali Yuga, then they're prominent. They're the, you know, like that. So that's the, you know, that's the case. And of tribals, I think the Gauls set the you know, social and political standards. Mm-hmm. Right? You know. Like that. So that's just how it works. And then the fun part is those who follow the Vedas, you know, who are that, you know, still, they're the savages.
Yeah.
what to do. So always all these philosophies are there. All it means, otherwise, how do you get all the species of life? Because it means all the consciousness there, just to be the less people doing that. Like, you know, you don't hear about millions of flies before. Now you do, you know, because just the consciousness less. Not that they didn't have flies and mosquitoes, just to be less of them. Does that make sense? You know, so yes.
Is that how they went to the forest and didn't get, like, so many mosquitoes eating them?
Could be that they were very tolerant, or
no, but this mosquitoes, like, you know, actually creating an injury and taking the blood. So if you allow all of them, like, sometimes some people,
well, it's not that they all come there and then in the morning you wake up and you're, you know, shriveled up. And
no, really, if I allow mosquito to bite me, that would happen. Because so,
yes, but I'm just saying that not necessarily everyone has that, but the point is that it's also the diet and this and that, and so when you have a simpler diet, they bother you less. You know, if you're living out in the forest, basically you're just eating fruits and roots that are out there. And
oh, so you're not tasting for them.
Yeah, you're not so like that. So, you know. And you're just one thing that's out there, and they'll bite anything. So, see, it's like if it comes down between us and a dog, then they're going to pick us. You know, but if it comes down to living out in the forest and between you and every other animal that's out there, you're just another animal that's out there. So they don't. In other words, they don't fly in from Bangladesh for the Gaur Purnima festival. Okay, Adhikarana 1, the atheistic Shankya philosophy refuted. Smritya Dikaranam. Sutra reference 2.1.1 and 2. Adhikarana Prakashika. Here the atheistic Shankya philosophers say that it is wrong for the Vedantists to contradict their Shankya scriptures, right? In other words, you should not bring up arguments that defeat their philosophy. That's wrong.
Well said, Maharaj. Yeah.
But in fact, their scriptures are wrong because they contradict the Vedic explanation of creation. A wrong belief is portrayed by them, and hence discarding such scriptures is no offense. Right? So their point is what their script, they have faith in their scriptures, and their scriptures are based on the Veda, but where the Veda, where it contradicts the Veda is the one to go, not theirs. You know? So that's the whole point, is you can see that it's based on Veda, but they make their own. So when you base on Veda and then make up your own, then that's you know, it's already coming into the, you know, this kind of aspect. That's why we say it's the six schools. These are the predominant, you can say, is they have a in their own right a fullness in their approach to these five aspects. You know what I'm saying? The Sambandhabhita and Prayojana. You know, well thought out, well detailed, though flawed, incomplete. But it's not that aspects that they have aren't part of the actual philosophy. They just don't take all the aspects because they're not interested in all the aspects. Right? Because they have a particular goal they want. And so if you take all the aspects, you're going to end up with a different goal. So they only take those ones that go along with what, you know, it's like kids, you know, using the, how you say, the instructions that the parents have given, but in a way just to get done what they want to get done. Yeah. They leave out the other instructions that contradict what they want to get done. Is that, you know? You know, it's like, you know how you told me I should be, you know, independent in my thought and, you know, get, you know, in other words, the kids being so dependent won't do things on their own. So you said, come on, think, do it yourself. You know how you told me I should do it myself and this and that, and now this, you know, it's going to come up as something totally different. So it's based on. So in other words, these six schools are based on the Veda. But they're not actually in pursuance of the Veda. Because the Veda conclusion is worship of Vishnu. Right? That's the actual purpose. So they're not in pursuance of that. But it'll be based on Veda, and then they'll end up with their own thing. So just because it's based on Veda, that's why we're getting these fine points, is that we can appreciate people, what they're doing, its connection ultimately back to the Veda, whether they know it or not. So these six schools, you can see the connection, because we're arguing over a verse in Chandogya Upanishad. and that, let's say, the guy on the street with a guitar, then it's not. He doesn't know the connection. So, therefore, you can see what's there. What's the principle? What's, in other words, with that secondary, what's the purpose of that? What's the primary aspect of that secondary? So, now they're using that secondary because of the modes of nature they're in. But because you, if you can see the primary, you know what it's for. So now you can give them, show them how to engage that properly in the primary and ultimately bring it to an alternative secondary that is more appropriate for worshiping the primary. So you can see how it's connected but how it's not. Right? How they have potential in the devotional by their philosophies and lifestyles and religions, but at the same time how it's not. So you can tell what is the devotional aspect of proper, but you can tell what is non-devotional. So that discrimination is important. So the Shankya, using that discrimination, is supposed to do that, but unfortunately they don't do that. They just do it up to a point and then stop. Does that make sense? So this way, by that fine discrimination, you can deal with anyone on their level and their level of consciousness, whatever situation, and show them how to connect to Krishna. This idea that everybody has to be in shorts and polo shirts, that's not going to connect everybody, because, like it or not, a lot of people don't like polo shirts or like shorts. I mean, they really don't. You know, they don't mind if you wear them, but they wouldn't want to wear them. So it's not universal. So the Vedanta, that's universal because it deals with everything on every, in other words, whatever consciousness can be there, whatever endeavor, whatever knowledge, whatever goal, you can see that all in relationship to the Lord. It's just where it is on the path. Okay, this aspect's very far down the path, but facing towards Krishna. This is far down the path, facing away from Krishna. This is close, facing away. This is close, facing towards. So you can see that. And so therefore you encourage so that they progress it. But this idea is that you take it that secondary is actually the preaching. In other words, soft preaching is taking the secondary and putting it into something that is less, extreme.
Confronting.
Yeah, confronting. So, yeah. That's right. So then that's preaching. No, primary is preaching. And if you can use a less confronting secondary, great. But unless you give them the primary, it is not preaching. Or it's very weak preaching. Especially when it starts to influence our lifestyle. Instead of us making them like us, we become like them. Right? I'm not sure. I can't remember Prabhupada. It's quoting from one of the Puranas. I kind of remember it's Varaha. But means it's talking about knowledge, from the Upanishadic knowledge. Then you hear. Then you contemplate, then you realize and practice. Then the fourth stage is you teach others. And in teaching others means you make them like yourself. So how can we claim it's the fourth thing that we're teaching, we're preaching, if we're becoming like them, not they're becoming like us? So it's like reverse preaching. You know?
Like Bhaktivikas Maharaj said that bridge preaching means you make a bridge, you bring them from that side to this side, not that you go to that side.
Go that side, yes. Yeah, that's it.
Maybe we should, the devotees should be more fixed up before they go out and preach, or they should be more...
Fixed means fixed in that faith in the Lord. It's not necessarily a matter of volume, it's just that they're convinced. It's like, I can't say now, but I can say, you know, before, 60s, 70s, somebody brand new could make someone else a devotee because they're convinced of that much. Mm-hmm. And so they give that. So, in other words, trying to refine the presentation of that conviction, we're losing the conviction. We have to be careful not to do that. You know, in other words, that conviction is there, now you refine the presentation. But that's called culture. So we're supposed to be culture. You know, so, but you have to be culture and know what is culture to be able to do that.
Because I think this is all of our responsibility to that these people that are going out there and they're falling behind as a movement, which that's our responsibility. That's our fault, not their fault. Like we should
Who's they? I didn't catch which days.
It's not the individuals, you know, like...
Yes, no, that's there. That's there. But the point is we have to... We're here to study so that we can understand it for our own life, and therefore we can help others with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
But now the overall society, how it's managed, that's not our business. Right? We're here to study this. Now, taking this, if now you can do something with that, that's up to your individual service, but that's not the purview of this discussion. Right? We'll only use these as examples so that we can see the practical application.
No, I don't mean our fault as in this circle. I mean like as an ISKCON society.
Yes, but I'm saying that's beyond our purview here.
Okay. Yeah.
Like we see, we apply, we do something.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav Bhaktivinoda ki.